Energy and sustainability are big issues in our time, and when Southern Oregon University realized it was due for some changes in its energy production, it looked to the idea of burning biomass, wood waste, to make steam and electricity. When you make two things like that, it's called cogeneration. SOU trotted out the cogeneration idea to the community in a number of ways, and the process, the public assessment process anyway, just drew to a close. So here's our chance to find out about community reaction and the next steps in the process. We have in the studio with me here Drew Gilliland, who is Southern Oregon University's Director of Facilities Management and Planning and Sustainability. Welcome back, Drew.
Thanks, Jeff.
Good to have you here. Brad Christ is in the studio as well. He is the Southern Oregon University Chief Information Officer. Welcome back, Brad.
Thanks. Good morning.
And joining us by phone is Adrian Dodona, who's the Public Engagement Lead from Gene Lawson Associates. Adrian, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you guys have all been fairly busy since the last time you were here, which was in early November. I went back and checked. And so what has been the process since that time?
Since we last appeared on the Jefferson Exchange, we conducted our online survey, inviting folks from the community to make comments, as well as, and perhaps Adrian can join in as well, we conducted a statistically valid phone survey. So we surveyed about 300 Ashland residents, calling and asking them about their opinion about various aspects of a cogeneration project, including a biomass option as well as natural gas. The questions that we asked, as well as the survey, and the survey results are available on the soucogeneration.org website. So you can see what those questions were, what the responses were, what the percentages were. In both cases, both in responses to the online survey as well as to the telephone survey, about 65% of Ashland residents favored the biomass option over the natural gas cogeneration option. In other work that was also completed since the last time that we spoke to you was Adrian and one of her colleagues did a number of community tabling events throughout at the Tuesday Market, down at the co-op, over at the library, really an opportunity to meet and talk with folks one-on-one, get them to participate in the survey as well as provide feedback in person. And I think those are the things that we did. We had a number of other appearances, you know, whether it was stories on television or in the Mail Tribune, Ashland Tidings. Am I leaving anything out, Adrian?
We did also hold a community meeting on campus on November 12th with about 50 people attended, and there was an article in the Daily Tidings that advertised that event as well. And we also hosted a meeting for faculty, staff, and students on October 27th.
All right, so the different chunks of the community came in together, but the public certainly has known about this since about mid-November anyway.
Yeah, we really initially kicked off our community outreach campaign in mid-October, but, you know, things really picked up in the beginning of November when we did our first radio show with you, and then we held, numerous outreach events throughout that month, including the tabling events. We canvassed, we flyered all the businesses downtown Ashland and the residents along where the proposed location of the biomass plant would be,
And it looks like in rough numbers you're talking about two-thirds of the community reporting as either very supportive or supportive.
Yeah.
All right. Drew Gilliland, I want to come to you because the driving force here is obsolescence. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So this process actually began about 2 years ago. As we had two boilers. We have four boilers that heat the plant, the campus, and two of them are failing. We were able to place two of them with stimulus monies, it's been about 4 years ago now, 5 years ago that those were replaced. One of them actually isn't operating today because it's down, but so we limp along with them, and it's just time to replace them, and so that's kind of what spurred this whole process.
And so, could you have replaced them with essentially what you had before?
Oh, absolutely. We can go back to natural gas, and once again, this process is about looking at energy policy on campus and different options, and so that's absolutely a fallback issue. Is just to replace what we have.
Right, and really one of the reasons looking at biomass, though, is that about, I think we talked before about how the university had signed as part of the climate action change goal, and about 92% of the emissions on campus are as a direct result of our steam facility. And so if we are serious and we are about reducing our carbon emissions, we really have to do something to mitigate those emissions coming from that facility. And with biomass cogeneration, that gives us that opportunity and would really essentially eliminate the majority of the emissions coming from the campus. Really, then we've only got the emissions coming from the folks, you know, as we use our vehicles to get to and from campus, or even things like the air travel that faculty and staff use when they go to conferences. But really, it eliminates the carbon emissions or mitigates them coming from the campus.
But the current plant is not cogeneration; it's just steam. Is that right?
Correct. We just make steam to heat the campus. And I want to add on to what Brad said. Probably the most interesting thing about just looking at something other than natural gas is what great conversations have come up about local air quality, CO2 emissions, wood products, coal, nuclear. Boy, I've gotten calls on everything when you start looking at options of what we're doing. And so it seems like the process is working really well, because that was the whole point of this outreach is, let's talk about energy and how it's being used and what our options are. So it must be working, because my phone has been pretty hot the last 2 months. So
that was the next question, is how much your phone has been ringing since October. And the answer is quite a bit. Drew Gilliland is Southern Oregon University's Director of Facilities Management and Planning and Sustainability. Brad Crist is SOU's Chief Information Officer. Adrian DeDona is the Public Engagement Lead working off campus for Gene Lawson Associates. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Southern Oregon University's biomass cogeneration plant proposal. 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area. 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. You know, it really sounds like a pretty good idea. I'm curious, is this also going to draw fuel from thinning the forests? Is it going to make for healthier forests? And just curious, what's the major argument against it? Why would somebody be against this project? What's the downside in people's outlook?
Why don't we start with either Brad or Adrian on the downside part of it, because I'm sure you've heard a fair number of comments on that department.
I think the biggest downside is just in terms of making sure that we're not having a significant effect on air quality. Now, this is a small facility. This isn't a large factory with multiple smokestacks billowing out, you know, black smoke 24/7. It's a rather small facility with a rather small stack.
Probably want to clarify that. Is it billowing out black smoke ever?
Nope.
Okay,
nope.
So not 24/7, nope. But not even one.
No.
Nope.
Okay. The only time that you'd actually see anything would be the same way that you're going to see smoke out of our existing facility is you'll get condensation on really cold days. Otherwise, you're not going to really see anything. And that's because, of course, you know, there are pollution controls. There are requirements from the DEQ. We do have to remove the particulate matter. So that really is the downside is that it does produce some particulate matter more so than natural gas. The benefit, of course, is that we're reducing, natural gas itself produces carbon. And so, you know, we don't control for that. Whereas with biomass, we are being part of the natural carbon cycle. So in terms of what the downside is, why would somebody not think it's a good idea, is any potential negative impacts on air quality, although I think those efforts can be mitigated.
And how much of an impact? Because we're talking about, and this has been brought up, I noticed even in the comments that you put out there, and it's a very complete website, soucogeneration.org. But a lot of the comments did revolve around things like, we worked for years to get the wood smoke pollution in the Bear Creek Valley down. It was an air quality non-attainment area. It's been pretty good for several years now, but there are wood smoke controls on residential wood burning. And so now we're talking about burning wood in the same air shed.
That's true. Although, unlike a home stove, even one that is certified, we have, there are much more stringent quality measures that we need to take because, of course, we're subject to permitting through DEQ approval, and so it's not as though that there wouldn't be any impact, And the university is open to talking about other types of mitigation efforts, which is, perhaps funding opportunities to replace additional uncertified wood stoves or finding other ways to kind of produce, that create kind of a mitigation bank for the emissions that it does produce. So that is one option. And that would actually improve air quality through this project because we would be taking those things that are dirty. Another option would be we've received a lot of interest not only from, people associated with the city of Ashland, but also around the valley for people who currently burn slash piles. And so if we're able to eliminate even a few of those kind of burning events, we can help improve the air quality because, of course, when they do the prescribed burns above the city, it just doesn't go up into the air. When you're coming into town, you can smell it. You can sometimes even feel it. Or when we've got the forest fires in the local area, I remember this summer just seeing the smoke roll across the Siskiyous from the Happy Camp complex. So if we can eliminate any of those types of burning, we could actually hopefully have a net positive impact on air quality in the valley. And we certainly don't want to go back to the situation that perhaps the Klamath Basin or others find themselves where, they're on the verge of additional kind of controls that have to be enacted because of wood burning.
Drew Gilliland, what would be the supply chain here? I mean, you're talking about, is it 5 truckloads a day of biomass?
Yeah, average 5 truckloads a day, 5 days a week. So we're not even talking about the weekends. The 50-mile radius and only those piles that have been thinned through forest projects. So once again, it's really important that not all biomass projects are good. If you're trying to do an industrial size 50 megawatt system or you have to go and get new resources from the forest, that's not a good idea. This is specifically sized and the fuel study's done so that we really only want to access, we really will only access the available fuel in the area. And we're looking at, oh my gosh, I'm going to forget my numbers. I think we have 90,000.
That's 100,000 bone dry tons.
Sorry, it's a little wet.
Bone dry tons.
And we're only using
15,000.
So you can see we're very small percentage of that. So.
But, is there one place you go to get this stuff? I mean, is it Biomass One in White City or someplace else? Are you dealing with the wood mills? I mean, because I can't imagine you're on the phone every day.
Yeah, you could go to the wood mills, mm-hmm. But that's not the goal. The goal is to get them from these private landowners as part of their forest restoration projects. And we have a large private landowner in the Central Point area that probably has enough forest for the next 10 years. So they have been identified through one of the studies. So once again, it's not a concern, quite frankly, as far as a wood supply. So,
go ahead, Adrian.
It's important to point out that it's wood waste. It's materials that would typically be unused. It's treetops and limbs, and it's not new trees.
It's really scraps and leavings, and not big logs or anything like that. Adrian DeDona is with Gene Lawson Associates, Public Engagement Lead on the Southern Oregon University Cogeneration Project. Drew Gilliland is SOU's Director of Facilities Management and Planning and Sustainability. Brad Christ is SOU's Chief Information Officer, and you can join this conversation on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, 800-838-3760, by email jx@jeffnet.org, or check out our Facebook page and make contact through there and get a look at a picture of Brad and Drew in the studio here. Let's take another call. Here's Barry in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. I have two questions. One is, I've seen that there are a lot of solar panels that were put up on the new dormitory. So I was kind of questioning, what was that doing in the new dormitories? And is that a possibility on other buildings? Because I'm concerned when you put money into one side, then you don't have it to put into something else. And it seems like there are a lot of buildings there that are certainly tall enough that could utilize solar panels well. And the other one was in the research, was it looked into what is done in Europe? Because I think Europe is far ahead of us in terms of doing, green energy technology.
All right. Thanks for that, Barry. Appreciate mm-hmm. it. So chapter one here is solar panels. And Drew, that's probably right up your alley. You probably had something to do with those.
Oh, yeah. So, our goal is to max out available roofs that are conducive to solar panels. Mm-hmm. And we did that on the North Campus at Raider Village, and it's very successful, and they're working just fine. We put them on the SU just a year and a half ago. We have them on top of the library. and we definitely have them planned for the new McNeil Student Recreation Center complex. So we're probably halfway to 60% there on really available roofs that we get good solar. The thing we always got to remember about solar is even on the best day of the year, in June when the sun's high in the sky and we're not running our air conditioning, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, we're only producing about 6% of our need on campus. So it's not the only answer. But as we look at, as everybody knows, we have to look at, our building envelopes and reducing, because that's really the key. But the reality of it is we need so much energy to operate the campus. So we will continue to put solar on. And we are, the students are very supportive and have brought money to the table to do that. And we're going to continue with solar.
The other part of Barry's question about Europe and whether it's a little further along in some of these technologies than we are.
Correct. So, there's different, if we're only talking about biomass and how it's combusted, there are several different methods of doing it. And we'll look at those. We're looking at more of a traditional method, but if you read and go to our website and look, there are other ways of combusting at different degrees. And the thing of it is we can't risk too much going on a technology that's not proven for all the reasons we've stated here. So we need to go with something that's proven for at least the last 5 or 10 years. So,
about the electricity part of the cogeneration part, because part of it is steam to heat the buildings, and then you got electricity. Would that all be used on campus? Would you be able to sell that commercially? What's the plan there?
Right. We're only looking to offset what we use. We're not in the business of selling electricity to make a profit, although maybe campuses should look at that. That's not our goal. It's only to offset what we have. So the way that it would work is we would generate green energy and then sell it back to the grid. That policy changes a lot. There may come a time with Bonneville policy in the near future that maybe the city of Ashland would actually want to purchase it from us directly. But right now the policy isn't to the point where it's beneficial for both parties to do that. So at this point the method is to sell it back to the grid.
Brad, you mentioned briefly the information about the emission control equipment required. How comprehensive is it? Because I imagine the diagram is not the scale that you provide on the website, but it looks huge.
I don't know that it's huge, and I'm certainly not a subject matter expert, but when we had folks like Bill Carlson, they've talked about the electrostatic precipitators for after it is combusted. Those remove the large particulate matter so that what is emerging is, just very, very, very tiny particles. And due to the size of the facility, it actually wouldn't be subject to some of the DEQ rules because it is so small and the impact is considered, almost largely negligible. So, I don't want to dismiss the issue because it's very important and it's been very important to a number of the commenters and people who have responded to the survey. And so what, as part of the facility, as part of the proposals in terms of the planning has been significant pollution control equipment so that we're not in a situation where so it's not even like a slash pile that's burning or, even home stoves. Considerably more pollution control measures need to be in place in order to meet DEQ approval, in order to meet, approval from the city of Ashland.
Right. Let me add on that. The DEQ policy is best available controls at time of construction. So you look at everything across the country, and they say, what is the best available controls right now? And you have to meet those standards. So they're very restrictive. And we don't look to looking at anywhere close to the 1.5 ton particulate that you can emit with a small generator like this. We're looking at half to a third that because we need to be on the front end of that kind of emissions because of where we live.
So on the public input part of this, Adrian Dodona, I would characterize what I've seen thus far as you seem to have a majority, certainly about a 2-to-1 majority in support, but the people who are not in support are very firmly entrenched. Do you see much in moving those numbers, and is there even any effort to be made there?
This is really at the tail end of our community outreach period for this particular phase in the project. there'll be more opportunities as the project moves forward, and to, you know, depending on what decision the university makes on what, you know, what method or what fuel source they are going to choose to use, that decision has not been made yet. Once a decision is made, there'll be other opportunities for public engagement through the permitting and land use processes. But at this point, you know, we're kind of wrapping up our efforts on public outreach for this particular phase.
Now, just in physical sense, I haven't pointed this out yet, Drew Gilliland, we're talking about not expanding the plant that is on the South Campus above the library on Southern Oregon University's campus, but down there in the flatter land across the boulevard of the North Campus.
Correct. We'd be located just off Whiteman and Siskiyou Boulevard, about a block and a half off Siskiyou at our current landscape yard. That's the end of our tunnel system on that side of campus, so that's the best way to hook up. And also, it's a lot easier for trucks to come in, and also it's less impact on any of the neighbors. I mean, if we tried to bring it in up here, number one, it's some pretty tight turns. Number two, it's too close to the neighborhoods, quite frankly.
So what are the next steps? What happens from this point forward?
The next step really is for the university administration, so the president and his cabinet, to make a decision about what kind of fuel source, what kind of proposal to pursue, whether it's biomass or if it's natural gas. And that making that decision will then lead to working with the legislature to get funding for the proposal. So as part of the normal capital projects, the process that is currently going on in Salem right now. And then if and or when funding is available, then we would go ahead and, like any other capital project, it would be put out for bid, and we would, you know, go before the city council for planning approval. We would need to apply to the DEQ for air permits. And so there, as Adrian mentioned, a real opportunity for public engagement and public outreach in the near future, no matter what the decision is on the fuel source.
So Drew Gilliland, that sounds like a couple of years worth of work ahead of us still.
Yeah, we're looking at earliest 2017. So, yeah, we got some time.
All right. Cogeneration on the Southern Oregon University campus still under discussion. We will certainly visit the issue again in the future. Drew Gilliland is SAU's Director of Facilities Management and Planning and Sustainability. Brad Christ is SAU's Chief Information Officer. Adrian DeDona joined us by phone from Gene Lawson Associates. Thank you all for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.